Welcome to the Weekly Squeak, your weekly geeky squeak with me, Chris Chinchilla. How is everybody? I guess we're probably all feeling somewhat the same. I'm tired today. I have one of my first articles is maybe related to this, but I'm kind of weary. It's all getting a bit the same, isn't it? I did promise I was going to try and make this show I don't even know what word to use anymore, a COVID-19 free zone. It's getting harder and harder. There's not much else to talk about sometimes. I've got a few bits of content around the topic. I'll try to use them to discuss other factors and not get too bogged down, but it's getting hard, I must admit. I have an interview this week with Troy Murray of Breaker. This is a little bit of a follow-up to an interview I did a couple of years ago from South by Southwest with Zach of Singularity DTV, which was a decentralized, etc. Kind of platform for video producers, I guess, like a decentralized YouTube plus YouTube Studio kind of thing. And Breaker is a follow-on from that. It's kind of the delivery of the content in some ways. Actually looks reasonably polished. I hope to try hands-on with it soon. There are beta versions of applications for a variety of platforms, and you can pay for the content you consume in a variety of different ways. Anyway, we'll dig into more detail on that with the interview, so stay on the show for that. Let's begin with some links. Okay, let's get all the COVID content out of the way first. First up, and I kind of referenced this in the introduction, this is an article from Wired. I seem to have groupings of various sites this week. I don't know, just where I've been reading, I suppose, or what's attracted my attention. This is from Eleanor Morgan, and yeah, the title kind of says it all. Coronavirus is totally screwing up our sleep, and here's how to fix it. I was glad to hear I wasn't the only person who seems to be tired recently. It's actually got a little bit better the past couple of days for various reasons. We've been very lucky here in Berlin that it's been sunny most of the time, which helps your energy. It also means you wake up earlier, but that's not necessarily a problem per se. Waking up too early all the time, feeling a little weary. There's various reasons for this, and this is what the article goes into. There are some reasons that due to the shift in seasons, of course, but also there are things like this constant kind of subliminal worrying about things, the lack of change, the lack of structure in some of your schedules is one, the lack of separation in your kind of home environment. And there's been plenty of articles for some time on trying to make your bedroom a place of relaxation. But if that's the only place you can also work in, then you're kind of spending all your time in this one room. It's hard to separate out your life and think of it as a relaxing place again. So lots of little things like that. Now, pertaining to the how to solve it, there's not necessarily any new advice here. There are things like, yes, trying to stick to a schedule. Do not be tempted to nap and sleep and sit around all day if possible. It's just impossible for everybody right now. So try to maintain as much structure and normal rhythms as possible. Also watching what you eat. Again, pretty easy to lapse into bad eating habits. I actually heard that apparently New York City in the past couple of weeks, the sales of junk food went through the roof. You know, it's comfort eating, but it's generally food that makes you not sleep very well. And this is strange because yesterday I had a slightly bad eating day. I had burger for lunch and it was a bit junk fooding and I didn't sleep very well. So maybe they're related. So who knows? Hard to say. I think it's kind of more long term maybe than a one-off day, but you sort of know what I mean. Your body sometimes feeds back to you with things that it didn't necessarily like. And I suppose one of the biggest ones that I have actually found useful just reading articles like this and speaking to friends and knowing that you're not alone. You're not alone in feeling worried. You're not alone in having a problem right now. I don't necessarily know that's a very concrete resolution, but I suppose, make you feel better about it and not feel so bad about it. And hopefully that reduces that sort of low-level stress and you do sleep better in the long run. So we shall see, I suppose. Next one, somewhat related again. I do apologize. We'll change the subject soon. This is from ZDNet, from Daphne Le Prince Ringeau. I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce that name. I'm going for the French pronunciation. You can't stop how data centers are coping with this crisis. This is actually specifically focusing on our UK data centers, which is nice. And of course, in this increased demand for online services, there are certain services that have to keep running to facilitate that. And whilst data centers are not necessarily high employee zones, there are certain people that have to go there to fix things, to install things, to check things. They tend to be quite large, so I'm guessing social distancing is easy-ish. Sometimes you might have jobs that require more than one person. I think one of the bigger challenges they mentioned here was the installation. The creation and installation of a data center involves lots of people from who knows where to come and build them, and we probably need them more than ever right now. And how do you handle that? And I suppose one of the lucky things, comparing, say, a data center to a factory or a grocery wholesaler, is these tend to be fairly well-paid, highly skilled workers, so they tend to be looked after better, which I'm casting no kind of judgment on that statement. Just an unfortunate fact. We could probably say that people working in the food industry and maybe logistics, depending what they are logisticking, they are transporting, are possibly more valuable. But that's a kind of bigger discussion than I necessarily have the expertise or time to go into right now. But so they tend to be better looked after and they have better conditions, I suppose, is the argument there. If there are power issues, you have to call in external parties, things like that. How do you keep these things going? I mean, people really need them the most. I think this links quite nicely to the link I mentioned last week on the way that service delivery have changed over the past couple of months. So now it doesn't necessarily affect data centers too much, maybe, but how that the demand for internet is now less about a handful of big consumers, but lots of small consumers, and handling that kind of very spiky demand has meant that they've had to probably change the setup too. So there are people there attempting to do that for you. And they also mention, of course, one of the other bigger problems right now of logistics, supply and demand for parts. Northern Italy, for example, is a big manufacturer of UPSs, uninterruptible power supplies, and that's hard to get those right now. Parts of Asia, of course, were in lockdown for some time. Those parts are backlogged. So things they might need to keep these services running are also hard to get hold of. So there's kind of lots of little factors there to think about in keeping these running. These sort of, I think data centers are an interesting beast because we're using them all the time, but we never see them really. And finally, in this topic, this is one of the most fascinating stories from the past few weeks and has been the cause of many memes as well. This was also from Wired, from James Temperton, and this is covering the strange correlation some have been making between the virus and 5G. This was not covered in the conference that I was at in November, that's for sure. Although, strangely, the source of this correlation is older than you might think. It actually goes back to January from Belgium, quite strangely, of an interview with a doctor, not necessarily even a specialist doctor, talking about the crisis long before Europe had even paid attention to it, noticing the fact that, or mentioning, not necessarily noticing, well, he was noticing, but mentioning the fact that Wuhan, where it started, in quote marks, was a large manufacturer of 5G equipment. I mean, it's a sort of strange correlation to draw. And I guess if you really wanted to say that the devices were infected, I doubt that many were installed since January. I'm not sure. It's hard to say. And of course, they sit in storage and shipped around a lot. I don't know. You could start to see why someone might draw that correlation. It's an interesting one. And then strangely, this one small interview with a small outlet in a small country that has since been deleted sparked this kind of bizarre outbreak, if you forgive the word, of feeling that this was true, involving people vandalizing infrastructure. And of course, you would probably immediately start thinking, how does anyone even know what it looks like? And yes, people have been attacking non-5G infrastructure. I heard an anecdote from a service engineer who actually said they are getting abuse from some people in some countries. There's certain countries that are doing this more than others, about the fact that they're servicing infrastructure, which wasn't even 5G. They have actually also been attacking 2G, 3G equipment. So yeah, I mean, it's not like this equipment has a kind of recognizable factor to most people to even know what they're even vandalizing. So yeah, it kind of relates a little bit to the last story. In times when we need this infrastructure, people are actually somewhat destroying some of it as well. And I think someone I heard somewhere made a good kind of point I don't necessarily know I think everyone knows that sometimes when you try to justify justify a reason to someone with a very strong opinion, it's difficult. But, you know, that 5G was allowing people to visit, in quote marks, their sick relative in hospitals and things like that. And if you're destroying this, that won't be possible. And I hope that that human factor means that people see that this is kind of an unhelpful endeavor and not even necessarily with any need. But anyway, some of my friends and people I know have had far harsher things to say, but I try to remain pragmatic about these things. But yeah, crazy times, crazy times. Okay, now time for something completely different. This is an article from Quanta magazine, from Susan D'Agostino, about Donald Knuth. I'm quite sure how to pronounce his name. Donald Knuth was the creator of TEX, T-E-X, also part of LaTeX, or LaTeX, or however you want to pronounce it. It's kind of formatting language for academic papers predominantly, but I actually have used it as well for other things. I quite like it. It's almost like CSS for print, if you like to think of it like that. And this is quite a nice article about this aging computer programmer who loves to tell stories, and he cannot stop writing books, and he's been working on this magnum opus of his. Hang on, I'll find the title. The Art of Computer Programming. He's been working on it forever. Like, I think it might be one of these things that he never actually finishes, and there's several volumes of it, and some have sort of been released and some are still in progress, and it's kind of this book about programming from a creative perspective, which really appeals to me, actually, this aspect of thinking of programming in different ways than just this kind of very engineer-focused, practical way. So it sounds quite a wonderful thing. And I guess this, you know, comes from a person who created something that you could do nice layout that he never expected anybody to use. So it kind of makes sense, and his mind has these correlations of ideas, maybe. And he's also a big believer in telling stories, which is something I try to do with my work. It's sometimes difficult. You don't always have the time. You don't always have the inclination from your side, from a client side, from a team side as well. But it's something I try to figure out how to do. I've had numerous to-dos and ideas on my list for some time about this kind of explaining programming through poetry or other creative pursuits. And is there even an appetite for that? This is the interesting point. It's one of these sorts of things that people like myself can bestow the virtues of, but is anyone interested is the harder question. And are you doing it for yourself, or are you doing it for someone else is a hard question to answer sometimes. Anyway, this is a very nice article. I enjoyed reading it, and I'm definitely going to do some more digging into some of his work and remember him every time I use LaTeX, I suppose, as well. There's a post here from 10 from Michael McWaters. This is actually one of these articles I tend to not mention very much, but I found it quite useful to me. It was a list of design apps for the Mac that the writer tried and gave some feedback on. And there are some ones here that you're probably familiar with, some that are not necessarily really about design, but just useful for a designer, I suppose. But there's actually a few in here that I was not familiar with, and I am quite looking forward to digging into a bit more. And also they mentioned some that I already like to use as well, like MindNode, for example. So if you're looking for some new inspiration on some applications to use in your Mac to help your work process, designer or not, or professional or aspiring designer, then have a look. Hopefully you'll find something useful there. Let me know if you do. Okay, definitely coming out of the technology bubble now. And this was a post that popped up into my feed that is not really particularly related to anything I normally talk about, but I found it such an interesting read. This is from a Rolling Stone, from Jordan Runtar, and it's an article called, and this again is a fairly self-explanatory title, 30 Fascinating Early Bands of Musical Legends. And yeah, that's basically 30 stories of famous musicians now, some I'm not so familiar with than others, and what they did before, including some of my highlights, Michael Bolton's death metal phase. It also tells stories of Led Zeppelin. Actually, I knew that Led Zeppelin were pretty well-known session musicians long before they actually played in Led Zeppelin. It talks about Reginald Dwight, aka Elton John, and his earlier acts. He actually, I think that was mentioned in the recent Rocketman film in sort of dramatized way. And actually, it's interesting to see how many artists kind of had bands before they were famous that taught them the ropes. Bands where they weren't necessarily doing anything particularly original, but they were good and they were solid and they toured with lots of well-known acts and then kind of learned the tricks of the trade to then do their own career. That seemed to be something that popped up quite a lot. But yeah, some really fascinating stories here. And I loved reading this on the weekend morning, I think, whilst having coffee in bed on Saturday or Sunday. So hopefully you'll do the same. And I'd love to hear your favorite story too. And finally, an article from Harry Guinness in the New York Times, How to Edit Your Own Writing. Most of these tips I were ones I followed already, but there's a nice concise, which is very appropriate for an article on editing, roundup of how to edit your own work, how to criticize yourself. The most obvious places to begin to do that, which is often the hardest thing to do when you're not used to it, is self-criticizing and self-cutting. So have a look. I think you'll find it helpful. That was my links for the week. And now here is my interview with Troy Murray of Breaker.
Troy Murray, I run strategy at Breaker. And I also do, I'm the supervisor of the Singles DAO Foundation. And I'm the co-technical architect of the Singles DAO.
Okay. And so what is Breaker? I mean, I previously spoke with Singular DTV a few years back, which was a sort of film, movie, assets, and blockchain kind of provenance platform, if I got that very brief summary correct.
Singular DTV is still around. It's kind of the mothership of the whole ecosystem. Breaker is a it's got its fingers in a bunch of stuff, but one of the main ones in respect to the Singles DAO is that it's a high level content portal for films, mainly indie films on the protocol. And it also works as a facilitator for the traditional financial system, linking into the blockchain ecosystem.
So maybe for people who don't know, let's explain what a DAO is and then what Singles DAO is specifically on top of that.
Yeah. So DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. There's a lot of different ways to look at what specifically a DAO is. It's kind of a nebulous idea. So our DAO specifically revolves around allowing the community to govern the media distribution protocol, which is a torrent network of peer-to-peer torrents for any type of media, any type of digital media you can think of.
And actually, this is interesting. I have often wondered with blockchain projects, or shall we say decentralized something rather projects.
Yeah.
There was always this protocol that existed for some time and still exists that was and is relatively successful, torrents. And I always wondered why people almost seem to forget that they existed. I actually came across a blog post. I don't know if it was anything to do with you guys. Someone talking about this, about monetizing torrents in some way, shape or form. I don't know if they were connected to with you, because it sounds somewhat similar, but it's actually quite an interesting idea. You know, leveraging something that is decentralized, has existed for some time. There's a lot of tooling around it, and adding just that little bit on top to kind of add the benefits of blockchain without necessarily having all the issues of that blockchain currently has. Is that maybe a relatively good sort of summary of what you were trying to do with those technologies?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the protocol of BitTorrent, I mean, it is probably, I think it's the first successful decentralized protocol ever. And then the next one would actually be probably Bitcoin. So it's interesting that people didn't originally kind of try to marry the two at the get-go. I think it's a little bit harder with Bitcoin because you can't actually do hashes to the addresses, to the Bitcoin addresses, where because of the smart contract system of Ethereum, you can hash torrents to wallets, which is what we do. And so by doing that, you allow for a torrent to be connected to an artist or a production company, or, I mean, we don't do this, but you could do it, an investor, right? Into a specific type of media. And so by leveraging the most successful decentralized network ever, we are able to do what we do, and we're probably going to be able to open it up to other forms of digital, not just media, but other types of anything you can use a torrent for, right? So right now we're kind of focused on, video and, music, but, you know, I can envision a future in which right now we're working with I don't want to give out the name of the artist because I don't think it's public yet, but they're working on creating a digital VR world for their music. Mm-hmm. And I would love to be able to distribute that VR world through the torrent distribution network. Mm-hmm. So doing things like that are on the roadmap. But yeah, I mean, if you actually look back at the history of torrents, one of the more successful UIs that was built on top of the BitTorrent network was this thing called Popcorn Time. Mm-hmm. And back in 2014, I actually reached out to the
vaguely familiar. Actually, yeah, I didn't realize that's what it was, but yeah.
So Popcorn Time, they kind of threw it. It was like the Napster of movies, right? Mm-hmm. It was a very easy UI you could download, and it worked just like Netflix. And you could watch movies by streaming them through torrents, which was the big breakthrough that they had, where you could take a torrent and stream it onto a device. And so I actually reached out to the team back in 2014, and I asked them if they wanted to connect Bitcoin wallets into their UI. And they got back to me very quickly, and they said, if we were to do that, we would be sued to all kingdom come. And it's interesting because if you look at what we have now, the first prototypes of what we actually built were based on Popcorn Time. And what we did was we just kind of flipped it and made it so that artists could use it then, and they were connected to Ethereum wallets. Mm. But if you look at the progression, we've been moving towards this way before even Ethereum or all this stuff. It just to me feels like the whole kind of digital world is kind of moving in that way, mm-hmm. and making these decentralized protocols. And so, yeah, it's exciting. Personally, I find it extremely exciting.
Who are they afraid of being sued by? Studios or?
The MPAA would have probably come down on them pretty hard, even though it was an open source UI built on top of the protocol. They were in contact with people in Hollywood, and people they were told they needed to shut down immediately but the source code was all put out there. And then if we had figured out a way, if they had decided to monetize it in any way, then they would have gotten into a lot of trouble.
Okay.
But I mean, there's no way to, but there's no way to, if someone were to go in there and do it, there's no way to really stop it because it's all open source. So I don't know. I'm still waiting for someone to actually do it just drop it and disappear. But, understandably, I mean, if people were to ever find out who you were, it'd be bad.
So with Breaker, it's artists upload and then the payment is direct to them, I guess. Is that how you're getting around that, or?
Yeah. I mean, with ours, it's voluntary, right? We're allowing the artists to come in, share their content. We're making a legal version of it. So it's trying to leverage all that and make it legal, essentially, and not doing it in the shadows of the internet.
Okay. But, I mean, I see on the website, I see snapshots of what I think are independent artists, but I also see, I'm seeing some posters here of, like, older classic films as well. So are you mixing together some of the kind of older sources, or are they out of copyright, or like how are you getting around that ability for people to torrent like we used to, but legally?
Yeah. So some of those older ones, they're actually, they're out of copyright.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we can just upload them, and we don't technically sell them. We just add them to the network. So if you go on there, you can download them for free. We seed it to the network.
Okay.
It's just a way to like give more content to the ecosystem, essentially. Okay.
And if independent artist X seeds but says, I want, 0.01F per play, then that's up to them. That's their parameter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they set the parameters on the cost of the transaction.
Okay.
For what they want to get. And then we take a small cut of that, and then the protocol DAO actually will take a very small cut according to what the parameters of the DAO are set for.
And is that used for something in particular, that cut?
Yeah, so that cut actually goes into the DAO treasury, which the treasury is controlled by the participants of the DAO, which is the community who run the DAO.
Mm-hmm.
And then that can then be used for upgrades to the protocol.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used for if the DAO wants to finance a project that mm-hmm. will be distributed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different things, but it's mainly just so that you can do upgrades for the protocol. The mm-hmm. idea is that the protocol is self-adaptive, mm-hmm. so that there is no need for outside funding. It can self-fund itself. So like if you think about HTML, right, there's a group of people that put money into this organization, and it's all nonprofit, and there's no way for them to finance themselves. So they are dependent upon that. But I mean, we've gotten all the way to HTML5. The idea is that this is a self-sustaining protocol. So there is an internal and monetary engine that it will survive no matter, even if there's no one in control, no one giving it money.
Okay. Now, one of the bigger issues at the moment with distributed applications, decentralized applications, has been user experience. I mean, a lot of it, especially from the wallet perspective, is still a little fiddly. You have on the website, you have some great screenshots of mobile applications and things like that, making it kind of look like some familiar platforms, shall we say. How far along that path are you to sort of making an experience that the majority of people could use?
Yeah, I think so the user experience in when it comes to actually being a portal UI on top of the protocol, ours is, I think, extremely good. And mainly because that we tap into the traditional finance world. So people don't have to have wallets connected to it. They can just download it, put in their credit card, and then we do the transaction. So if you pay with a credit card, then we put it into crypto and then we filter it. There's a lot of overhead on that, and that's why the Breaker UI actually takes a larger cut than if a strictly native crypto UI. But if you look at strictly native crypto portals, I think that there's been a lot of progress in UI. So managing your keys, I think there's been a lot of progress in that, which is the big one. I think like a system like Fortmatic has done a really, really good job at being able to manage that for people who might not be crypto heads. So I personally believe that that's really kind of going in a positive direction. I don't think we've seen the killer app for it yet, but I think that there's been amazing developments in the progress for sure.
And is the protocol and the app live? Are people using it right now on both sides?
Yeah, so the protocol is technically live. The DAO is not live. So if the DAO, actually, we're about to launch the testnet for the DAO today. But so we're looking at hopefully late May release of the DAO, which is the DAO app. But the protocol does exist. It works. The hashing mechanism is all there. We are working on open sourcing it, which requires a lot of documentation on our end. So we're working through all the documentation of how all the back end works. But the app, the portal is live. You can download the Breaker app right now. You can also download the app in the Google Play Store and the Apple library, whatever it's called, their app store.
So I was mostly interested because I was interested to know when you mentioned that you kind of have the option of crypto and then traditional finance for any of the interactions where people have paid in quote marks. Has it been a majority crypto or has it been a majority traditional payment methods?
I don't know the exact numbers, but I believe it's been more in the traditional monetary. Mm. It hasn't been in crypto. And I think the reason for that is that we haven't advertised the portal to crypto heads. We advertise more to the independent film world. Mm. And what they know is paying a credit card. But yeah. As we open up the protocol and we open source the UI so that anyone can build a portal, I think we're going to have more crypto heads moving into it because they'll be able to use it in any way they want.
Yeah.
Which is what most crypto people are kind of into, where they get to play around with an open source UI and create new environments for consumers.
And in theory, I guess you could start to do things like micropayments on videos via MetaMask and things like that, maybe.
Few 100%.
Companies have tried this in the past and it hasn't been 100% successful with micropayments, but I mean, sometimes some people are too early and then they set the way for people to come along later.
I think a lot of the original micropayment systems were never built on crypto. And
there overhead, was one out of here, the Satoshi Pay, which I'm 100% sure if they're actually still going or not, but I haven't heard much from them for a while. But yeah,
I think another problem with the micropayment systems are the scaling issues. Mm. So if you were to really get a successful micropayment system going, the payments themselves would end up getting increased because we just don't have scaling done.
Yeah.
But you could, I have looked into this and I thought about, you could build one on a ZK Snark,
okay,
which would allow for really high throughput, but we haven't dove that deep into it yet.
Now, for the kind of majority audience, I mean, you already sort of alluded to it earlier, that sometimes the problem with starting new media platforms is you kind of have to have this balancing act of very worthy independent content and content that people actually know and want to consume, whether you kind of like that or not. And this has often been the downfall of some of these alternatives to some of the mainstream options. I can see you've got, for example, a profile of Trojan Records, which actually I think I might watch. That's an excuse to actually try the platform. I'm a big fan of Reggae Ed Scar, so I may actually have a look at that. But are there any other artists who are using Breaker exclusively or as part of some other offering that are bringing people to the platform, bringing consumers to the platform?
Yeah, I think the biggest artist we had doing stuff like that was Grammatic, who's a EDM artist.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we're actively searching for artists to use the platform. I think when we release the open source UI, the idea will be to kind of really go after more tech savvy artists who can create their, we call it like a TV studio in a box. So you'll be able to create your own bespoke personal user interface for your fans. So how you use that in the long run is will be up to the artist. But yeah, I think that will be the linchpin, but that's just my guess.
And from memory, I think that's what Zach mentioned when I spoke to him about Singular DTV. I think that was a similar sort of idea, the giving people not only the tools to distribute but also the tools to create in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the goal, is providing as many tools that for them to distribute and create.
Okay. Now, you've spoken about lots of things you want to do, but kind of for the next 6 months, what's actually sort of concretely on the roadmap, your top priorities?
Yeah, so my top priorities are getting out the DAO by the end of May, which will include also releasing a new token to all singles holders. So if you hold singles, you'll get a one-to-one token of the governance token, which will then govern the DAO. And that's the first part. And then the second part will be the open sourcing of the entire protocol. So allowing for true decentralization of the back end, which we have like a hybrid version right now, and we need to decentralize where, like, specifically metadata of the torrents, where are those held? I think what we could be using is IPFS or some other. Ethereum might have Swarm by then. So there's the roadmap for that. And then the other part is creating this mechanism called content mining. But that's more of a 2-year plan than 6 months. Yeah.
And actually, I was just clicking around on the artist page whilst you were mentioning some of the aspects there. And there is, you do have this ability for artists to see their data. What does that mean for an artist, or what will it mean for artists? What will they be able to see?
So if you actually go to singlesdao.io, we have a channel on Breaker where we upload all of our calls and talks. And if you scroll down through the page, there's a section that says Project Call Statistics. And on there, it says the following data is provided by Breaker Pro. And so Breaker Pro, which is where the artists get to see their data, it allows them to see the download summaries of all their content they have on the system, downloads per IP location, so you can see where all your fans are. And then you can see your ratings. And then you can also see daily downloads and all your reviews. So you get to have a dashboard of how your fans are seeing your content in real time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What? Just tell me the spelling of the DAO thing again. I'm just having DuckDuckGo is auto correcting it to Singles Day all the time.
yeah, it's SNGLS.
Ah, right. S, no vowels. Okay.
D. It's DAO.io.
All right. There we go. And what do you, I mean, you're obviously very sort of strongly planted in media right now, but what other places do you think this may be useful and applicable to?
Yeah. I think you could see video games. I also think you could see fashion houses use it. But that's a little bit down the road. And then, music, video games, digital art, I think, stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's definitely been a few attempts in the past, especially for the digital artwork, on the quote unquote blockchain. I do wonder like why they weren't successful and why new adventures into it might be. Do you think it might be again be a case of they were just like some of these, for example, trying to forget the name now. Ascribe, a couple of years back, maybe they were just too soon. And now it's starting to make more sense to people and the tooling and the networks are more in place. You hope, I guess, at least.
Yeah, I definitely think a lot of them were too soon. I think most of those kind of fall into that category because we didn't have the tools yet really built for the infrastructure. Mm. Where I think if you look at one of my favorite projects right now is Saint Fame DAO, and it's a clothing house that releases, it's like an online fashion house and it's controlled by a DAO and and they're having great success in what they're doing. And I think that they started off with a really small idea, but they needed to have a lot of the infrastructure built for them where they needed someone to create the DAO a DAO smart contract. And now they're using that. So you're seeing a lot of the community like rally around ideas like that. And I think we're probably on the precipice of an explosion of these ideas once we start to see that they're actually viable.
Was that actually tying things to a physical product as well?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's fascinating to watch.
Okay. All right. The last question I always like to ask is, it's a very vague question, I know. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to make sure people know, understand about Breaker?
I think it would be probably more around Singles DAO. And so the people understand that this DAO is going to be the governance layer that controls the parameters of the protocol. And we haven't seen that yet. And so if anyone's interested in being able to control globally parameters of a media distribution protocol that anyone can use, I would highly recommend you look into our white paper and check out our Medium articles.
That was my interview with Troy Murray of Breaker. I hope you enjoyed that. Now, I do have some things to update you on. Lots of things still in progress. I have lots of articles in progress that you will be able to see soon. I have lots of things in progress. Sometimes doing a weekly show, not much changes between the week, but I've got a few little things to update you on. Bear with me whilst I flick backwards and forwards between a few things to tell you about some of them. So first and foremost, I took part as a guest in a roleplay live stream, which was fun. This is Crit Test Dummies. You can find it on Twitch, the episode from last Wednesday. So Wednesday the 15th featured me. I had a good time. We went for nearly 4 hours. It was quite exhausting at certain points, but it was good fun. I am related to that. I am starting my solo gaming live stream this weekend. I'm not 100% sure of the date yet, but keep an eye out on my Twitch channel. Christian Schiller, as always. There's nothing there right now, so it would be very obvious when it is live. And following up from that, what else happened last week? I've been attending lots and lots of remote conferences. I'm going to write up some of them soon. I haven't always been able to attend as much of the talks as I'd like because they're often starting on Eastern time in the US, so sometimes you don't always get the chance. I was particularly impressed with the React conference and just seeing how you could potentially start to charge for online conferences. And I wrote a piece on this very early in the crisis for DZone about the kind of model for events that may end up happening. And it's nice to see some people start to try these ideas, actually. I was ahead of my time. And this conference in particular tried that, like having a free core offering, but then offering things, additional options you could upgrade to. AMAs with speakers and things like that, which I found quite an interesting idea. And we'll see how successful it was for them. I also recorded some more stories for the new storytelling podcast. We have edited the first one. The second one I hope to be editing this weekend. So there's progress on that too. I will start publishing some new blog posts, storytelling blog posts that will be recorded for that later, probably over the weekend, maybe. I need to figure out where I'm going to publish them, actually, is the more crucial thing right now. I also started my first office hours for people who want help with documentation. And you can actually, I think the best place to find the link right now is on my Twitter profile. It's a pinned tweet at the top of my Twitter stream to find the link to register for sessions. I'm running them on Wednesday and Friday, from sort of European afternoon times. So sort of morning Eastern time in the US. I'm not promoting it massively heavily yet because I'm still figuring out lots of things out, but, they will hopefully be coming live soon. And other articles I have in progress. I attended a briefing with Canonical and Ubuntu on Monday, so there'll be something on the latest versions of Ubuntu very soon. I have some bigger articles with some new clients in progress. I have some DZone posts on Grafana in progress, and also a write-up of cybersecurity in a pandemic, somewhat related to the Critical Start interview from a few weeks ago. So lots of things in progress, just waiting for them to be published and to share them with you. You can also see, they were published some time ago, but I didn't actually know, but you can find the links on my website on christianchiller.com. Some blog posts I've been doing for GitLab as well, and there's more of those in progress. And I have lots more in progress, so much in progress, just trying to actually get things sometimes out, or remembering to tell you about them, I suppose, is sometimes the bigger thing. I'm doing some work on my website as well, tidying up a few things, removing a few ideas that haven't really realized, adding a few new things, like trying to add some of the places I've been appearing on other people's shows, things like that, but also adding a better space for some of my more creative work, which is actually, you know, nearly done. And I'm suddenly realizing I have nowhere to really share it with people. So that's in progress too. So for now, until next time, please rate, review, share if you enjoyed the show. Please look at christianchiller.com for more details of all the things I've mentioned. And if you have been, thank you so much for listening, and take care. Stay safe.